I like sports. I could do something in sports.
Uh-huh. In what capacity?
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, you make good comments.
So what about that?
Well, you know, they tend to give those jobs to ex-players and people that are, you know, in broadcasting.
Living George Costanza's dream, you're tuned into The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Well, that's really not fair.
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. Good song kicking us off because, as it stands right now in the NHL, everybody's a winner. Trade deadline getting closer and closer by the minute.
A lot of people convincing themselves that they're winners and that they're making the right decision.
Oh, I agree. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but... the song that you're hearing is Everyone's a Winner by Hot Chocolate. It was released on March 4th, 1978, and peaked at number 6 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. For those who may not know Hot Chocolate well, again, this band, everybody's like, what else have they done? Again, they had a number one hit, or they had a hit song, like a top 10 song, every year on the U.K. singles chart from 1970 to 1980. So for, like... 10 straight years, 12 straight years, 11 straight years, whatever it was, they had a top 10 hit.
Holy.
Their other big hit that you might recognize, You Sexy Thing. That was them.
That was them?
That was them.
Oh.
That one actually charted higher. It went to number 2 in the U.S.
Now that I'm thinking about it and I'm listening, yeah.
You can hear it, right?
I can hear it.
So the guy that made that all happen was original frontman and songwriter Errol Brown. He was the one of the originating sort of guys that got this super group together. But You Sexy Thing made the top 10 in 3 separate decades. That's how often it's been reused and re-released. It's been in the top 10 for 3 separate decades.
That's insane.
That's crazy. So Errol Brown,
fantastic song.
Oh, it is. I mean, Errol Brown, who wrote this song, he was basically the primary songwriter for most of these. He unfortunately passed away on May 6, 2015 from liver cancer at the age of 71. So we unfortunately lost a musical genius. But this song, and I mean, you'll hear it later. We're going to have You Sexy Thing on as well at the end of the show, I think, just because it's a little bit of fun. But I mean, these are fantastic songs. But I mean, yeah, like these guys could work it. So yeah. Good for them. Good for them in terms of having it. And again, everybody thinks they're a winner today in terms of the trade deadline. So let's jump into. We're gonna start with a little bit of fun, a little bit of discussion before we get to the trade deadline, because let's save the meat for the main course. But we'll start off with a little bit of PWHL news, because we didn't report on it, although we probably should have reported on it last week or week before, whenever it was announced. PWHL is going to use a new format for their playoffs, which a lot of people may raise their eyebrows at, but it's not super different than other leagues have used, but it's got some fun aspects to it. So when it comes to the playoffs, PWHL will reward the top 4 teams with playoff spots beginning on May 6th. So May 6th, circle that on your calendar. That's when playoffs start for PWHL. There won't be a 3-6 or 4-5 play-in game. Top 4 make it, bottom 2 do not. So you got to push to the finish line here in terms of what's going on. There's about anywhere between 10 to 12 games left for the teams as well in terms of getting that done. There's a break in there and everything as well for world championship hockey and stuff or whatever. But at the end of the day, May 6th is when we're going to start the playoffs. Where things get a little more fun is that the rule will allow the first place team, the team that finishes first overall, they'll be allowed to select their semifinal opponent.
Which I think is amazing.
Now, a lot of people are going to go, wait a minute, hold on a second here. How can that work? And the answer is simple, is that whoever's left over plays in the other semifinal at that point.
Yeah.
It's not hard. But it makes it a little more interesting because you could have matchups like Toronto-Montreal in the first round rather than having Toronto-Montreal finish like 1-3 or 2-4, for example.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people are going to default to like, oh, well, why don't you just pick the worst, like the last team to make the playoffs, like the worst team to make the playoffs. And then you think about all of the first round upsets that happen every single year because a team just is hot at the right time.
Or a team you just don't want to play.
Exactly, like, a team that you're not good against.
Like they're physical and you don't want to play a physical round, for example.
You know, say you're slated to, based on the seeding, like you're taking on a team that got the best of you in the season series and you're like, all right, you know, I kind of want to avoid them and maybe they get knocked out. So you pick a different opponent you're better at playing against, and then that's another reward for finishing first in your...
But it's a bit of a slap in the face for that team that gets picked as well, because like, oh, we're going to beat you guys, so you guys are going to be our first round.
Yeah, we think you're so bad, we want to play
you. Like, it should raise the temperature of that series pretty quickly.
It's much like, you know, last year when the Leafs, you know, were chanting, like, we want Florida.
Yeah, right.
Like, bring
on
Florida.
And then they got him. And...
Florida came in with a lot of piss and vinegar and smacked them in the mouth.
Right.
And the players were talking about, like, we heard that. We knew what was upcoming
into this. That's the fun of this, is I think that this could really change the outlook for a lot. Again, both teams, obviously. But the outlook for the underdog now all of a sudden becomes, you want us? Here it comes.
Yes, and it's a great tool to create rivalry.
Oh, for sure.
Because it immediately, like, playoffs are already high stakes, high tension, tend to be where rivalries are born. But to add that extra layer we want to play you,
now you're
is
gonna,
so much more.
You're probably going to ask, where did this come from? Several European leagues use this method already in order to really stoke the fire, as you said, Jay, build rivalries. And then, obviously, you know, from there, PHF used it a little bit in terms of having that option as well for its top team. So it's been seen before in North America, hasn't been really talked about, but it's certainly been seen in European leagues, and it works well there. So I don't have a problem with this, because a Toronto-Montreal or a Montreal-Ottawa or a Toronto-Ottawa would just be chaos in that first round if they met, because we're talking about, you know, teams that legitimately play to die here. Like, they're legitimately going to give everything they have because, hey, it's the first championship, and, oh, we have a distinct rivalry with you already.
Yeah. Or the insanity of, we're going to just pick the second-place team because we want to get this over with.
Right.
And, you know, we'll go to war in the first round and see what happens.
And see who comes out on the other side. PWHL imposed a 24-hour time limit on that. Obviously, the first-place team has to make a decision quickly so that, you know, teams can get travel schedules and everything ready for that as well. So, again, I don't have a problem with that. I think that, you know, most of these teams are going to be, whoever finishes first is probably going to have a pretty good idea who they want to play long before that anyway. So we'll see what happens at that point in terms of moving forward. Semifinals and final series will be best of five series. I disagreed with this setup, and I know we talked about this a little bit before the show, Jay. Games 1, 2, and 5 will be played at the higher seeds arena, which to me doesn't make sense, because if you're the higher seed, essentially if you're the favorite going in, do you really want to win the championship? I mean, everybody wants to win the championship. Don't get me wrong. But do you really want to win it in front of the opposing team's fans?
Not really, especially if it is that best of five and you can win it in three games. Like, you go up 2-0 in the series and you're like, all right, unless we lose these next two games, we're winning the championship in their barn.
Right.
And it kind of ruins a bit of the fun of it.
Like, I don't mind the semifinals being the 2-2-1. But at the final should be like a one, like a rotate, like 1-1-1-1-1.
Yeah. And the finals, like, then you're absorbing a little bit more of a cost for travel and things like that, because you're going back and forth and you don't get to, like, you know, there's a little bit more cost associated with having to travel back and forth and not stay in a place for a little bit.
But it's your
final.
Right. It gives each team a chance to win on home ice, which I think is the important thing. So, I don't know. To me, it makes no sense that they're doing it that way. But, I mean, hey, I'm not in charge, so that's fine in terms of what's going on. But no big deal. In the spirit of traditional hockey, games requiring overtime will be decided by a 5-on-5, obviously. We're going to play normal, everyday hockey.
Continuous OT until somebody scores.
Until somebody scores, yeah. And again, I don't have a problem with this. I think the teams win as a team, lose as a team in terms of that idea. Having the top three players play 3-on-3 for the majority of overtime would be fantastic, but it also removes a lot of those secondary players, those depth players that teams come to rely on. So I don't have a problem with that in terms of having... Basically, everybody gets... Every player has a chance to be the hero or the heroine in the story, which is fantastic. For the two teams that don't take part in the playoffs, PWHL has decided to employ the Gold Plan. Now, for those who don't know what the Gold Plan is, Adam Gold, a statistician, basically came up with this idea that any team that gets eliminated from the playoffs starts collecting points based upon the number of games they win after being eliminated. Mm-hmm. And that will determine where they finish and or where they pick in the upcoming draft. It was originally designed for the NHL, but the PWHL has taken it and basically said we're gonna use that exact concept mm-hmm. in order to determine the top two draft positions between the bottom two teams that we have. Mm-hmm. The only catch on this is that with six teams, you may not get a very long runway on this.
No, and then that's fine. Like obviously, it's going to be a little bit wonky this first year, probably next year. But like,
okay, but my question is though is that if you're going to have a battle for the last playoff spot. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have a team eliminated long enough to really build any points up.
Yeah.
Which sucks because you might end up in fifth, you might end up in sixth mm-hmm. and play no games.
But that also can heighten the drama of it, right? Because if the last place team who gets eliminated first is trying to build up points and they're trying to win and the team ahead of them is fighting for a playoff spot, suddenly those games matter so much more because both teams need to win for their respective reasons.
Sure. But
it kind of adds an extra dimension that I think season hockey can be missing.
I'll give you the example right now. Boston has 18 points, they're in fourth place. Ottawa has 17 points, they're in fifth. New York has 16 points, they're in sixth. There's 2 points separating the bottom three teams.
Yeah.
So with a game in hand, Boston still has one game in hand. They have 10 games remaining. I was actually wrong. It's not between 10 and 12. It's between 8 and 10. I thought there was actually a couple more games in there. But anyway, with a game in hand, Boston obviously has an advantage to pull ahead of the bottom two teams, Ottawa and New York. But if these two teams stay battling throughout the rest of the season, or these three teams stay battling throughout the rest of the season, we may not see a Gold Plan even come into effect here until... Yeah. Like the final like two games of the season,
which is fine. Like,
right, I'm not complaining about that. I like that competition.
With so few teams, you're kind of, this is a thing that, I mean, it's cool that they're announcing it now because it gives us an understanding of like, okay, this is how the seeding is going to be determined. But it's like, this is a thing that you look at now for 5 years down the road when there are more teams.
Sure,
10 years
yeah.
down the road yep. when there are more teams. And it's going to make for some very interesting stretch runs to the playoffs because, right, like, I'll be perfectly honest. When the Jets were bad, as soon as the Jets got eliminated from the playoffs, there was no reason to watch.
So if you want to hear intrigue, just before you go on, mm-hmm. you want to hear intrigue, because I was just taking a look at the schedule. April 20th, so again, playoffs start May 6th. April 21st, Boston plays New York. April 24th, Boston plays Ottawa. Okay, so
could be some meaningful games there.
Right. April 30th, Ottawa plays New York.
Some very, potentially very meaningful games there.
So Ottawa, again, not saying they have to win, obviously, in terms of what's going on, but Ottawa would probably want to win. March 25th, Boston plays New York as well. It's the only other game they sort of meet at that point or whatever. But at, like that entire last 2 weeks of April, that sort of setting up the May sort of schedule.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Imagine if it comes down to that last game decides who gets the first overall pick.
The final game of the season, and then you're going to laugh at this only because I think it's crazy. Final game of the season on Sunday, May 5th, Ottawa is in Toronto. Montreal is in Boston on May 4th. And for New York, they have Minnesota on May 4th as well. Like those teams have to beat a playoff team in order to get into the playoffs, basically.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Or they have to beat a playoff team to get the first overall pick.
They're far out. Montreal's got a big lead on these guys now. Montreal's got 30 points already this season.
Okay. But yeah, like I think that it's a great idea. I don't think we're gonna really see it come into play this year. But it the thing that it does is it discourages tanking because you actually have to play well and win hockey games to have a shot at the first overall pick. So we're not going to see, you know, some of the shenaniganery that's gone on the last few years. And it also changes the conversation around the trade deadline, because it's not with, you know, teams selling off everything.
Every asset, yeah.
You know, every little piece they have, including the drink machine, to, you know, just crater the rest of their season so they get the first overall pick. You have to be a lot smarter about who you have, who you keep, what you build with, because those games are going to matter.
Right.
You know,
you have to win if you want to pick high. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it completely changes completely changes how teams plan things. It means that better players are going to stick out on, you know, teams for a lot longer. People are going to be, you know, not, it's not going to create more jobs, but it's going to kind of change the complexion of the league, and it's going to make it harder for those playoff teams, those teams that are on the bubble, who are trying to make the playoffs so they can get this, you know,
right,
to get that shot at the cup. It's going to make it harder for them, and also harder for the teams that are in the playoffs to keep those positions, because there's going to be teams fighting underneath them.
I like the fact, though, that you're not going to see a team, like with 2 weeks to go, just going, we're going to throw in the towel right now and just go for goal plan points. Because, again, if you got a shot to make the playoffs matter, yeah, number one. But number two, if a team believes they are truly out, they have to compete. They have to win in order for the goal plan to matter.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't win, if you just decide to throw in the towel and walk away from the season, you're not going to pick where you want to pick.
Yeah. Hockey's going to be competitive all the way to the end. So it's going to be real. And like the thing is, you know, talking about like, oh, how is that not fair? How is that fair for like the teams that are like on the bubble or whatever? And yeah, it's like the worst teams should have the best shot at the first overall pick. And those teams are going to get eliminated first. So they're going to have more runaway to collect gold plan points.
Well, let's not forget the worst teams are the worst teams because they haven't won all season either.
Yeah.
So
exactly. Maybe imagine this. The last place team doesn't get the first overall pick because they're so bad,
right,
that when it mattered, they couldn't win.
So if there's a tie, here's where things get a little interesting. If there's a tie in the gold plans competition, the team with the most regulation wins after being eliminated from the playoffs will earn that coveted first overall pick position. If teams are still tied in regulation wins, the team with the most combined overtime and shootout wins after being eliminated will earn the top pick. And if they're somehow still tied, the team with the fewest overall regular season standing points, or the fewest overall regular season standing points, will earn the first selection. So again, fairly straightforward. So if you have the least amount of points, you're going to pick first overall, basically, after all the ties.
All the tiebreakers.
Yeah. So. Again, it's a blend between traditional and sort of this new idea of how to make the games matter more. And I actually don't mind this. I think that the PWHL could have a lot of fun with this.
Yeah, and it's good for teams that are kind of struggling, because then they have to be good. They have to put some competitive hockey there, and it's better for their fans.
Right.
They're not just watching this team crater.
And the last thing you want to have is, in the first year of your league, have fans not show up for the last 2 weeks of games
because
they don't matter. They do matter still. Let's go. So, see what happens there. PWHL also had some jersey shenanigans this week after a company decided that they were going to buy some ad space on jerseys. Now, again, I have no problem with ad space. People are going to freak out and say, I'm against ads on jerseys as a whole, but I understand the revenue aspect of it. I get that. I'm never going to stand here and say, hockey doesn't need revenue. Women's hockey doesn't need revenue.
You know,
it definitely does.
Ads on jerseys. It does have a soft spot. Those like crazy billboard Euro jerseys.
Right.
I love them in a very fun way.
I have no problem. I mean, I do have a problem with all the ads that some of them put on there, but I get it. I get the reason they do it. However, Molson this week decided that they were going to I don't want to say send a mixed message, because it's not a mixed message. It's legitimately two different concepts, and try and jam them together and make them one. For those that haven't heard, Molson bought the area where above the jersey numbers, where names normally are, and are forcing the PWHL to move the names to below the number.
Yeah.
And the reason they're doing this, according to them, according to their
that
setup,
that stupid video they put out,
it's called a new. It's a new campaign called "See My Name," where they're basically selling female empowerment, stating that, you know, player names are usually covered by the player's hair, which led to Molson, quote, covering its name so hers can be seen, unquote.
That is such a disingenuous, gross corporate thing to do. It's like, it's literally drawing attention to yourself,
right?
With this like virtue signaling,
and I'll say this right now: if you're watching games on TV, the number of times you'll see Molson will outnumber the number of times you see players' names.
Yes.
Why? Because of where it's located on the jersey. Mm-hmm. you don't see cameras panning down on players. You see them up near their shoulders and heads where they're, mm-hmm, you know, when everything's going on at that, yeah, point. I hate it. I hate this idea, and I understand Molson making a donation and making, you know, adding revenue to the PWHL. Mm-hmm. But if Molson was really into this, why didn't they get on board at the beginning of the season? Why didn't, yeah, they do this at the beginning of the season and say, here's what we want to do?
It's because they found a really neat advertising opportunity where they could put out a flashy video.
Sure, sure.
And talk about female empowerment and all of this stuff when it really just creates more of a problem. Yeah. Than I think it solves.
I mean, we'll talk about from the broadcasting aspect in a second, but Montreal and Toronto will be the first to wear the jerseys tomorrow on International Women's Day. They will be the first to have their names below the number, mm, in the PWHL. The release was quick to note that this move of the name is, quote, a first step of many in Molson's mission to help elevate female hockey players, unquote. What? What other moves can you have to elevate them besides putting them in commercials? You're a company.
Putting them on cans.
Sure.
We're going to put them on the sides of the case.
And don't get me wrong, Natalie Spooner's 24 leads to all sorts of 2-4 jokes that you can make.
Fantastic.
All over the place. But at the end of the day, do you really want your players being associated with, I'm going to say, a less than tasty brand of...
I mean, I'm not the one here insulting a heritage Canadian beer brand.
Listen, I have no problem because they're based out of, what, Colorado now, wherever they're from?
That's not a Canadian brand anymore.
So I look at this and I go, you're not doing what you intended to do. I get that you want to sell female empowerment. You want to give these women a bigger platform, bigger stage. Mm-hmm. But to use them to do that in the way that you're doing it, moving their names down the jersey is not elevating their setup. If anything, as a broadcaster, if I can't see the number because the number is obscured by hair, mm-hmm, I look for the first few letters of the name.
Yep.
It's the only way I can figure out who it is. And if those jerseys are bunched up now because of the way the jerseys sit, mm-hmm, on the pants, if they get tucked in by some means... Again, I'm not complaining about the hair. Nobody's ever complained about hair in women's hockey. I mean, there's jokes about it, about, I don't know who that is because I can't see their number. And then you wait till they turn their shoulders. And you can figure it out pretty quickly.
Or you just figure out, like, you figure it out by the numbers, or you figure it out, like you said, by the first few letters,
right,
of their name. And that's all you. That's what I do in men's hockey. I don't read everyone's nameplate as they zip by.
No, exactly.
I know what their numbers are. I kind of get a vague sense of what they look like, and it's the first few letters. I'm like, okay, that's that guy.
Right. And you know at that point who it is, so go with it. The other thing I don't like about it is the fact that we're removing the legacy of women by empowering a name. And I'll say that only because, and again, you're going to go, well, that doesn't really make sense. But it does, though, because, again, when we talk about women's hockey, we talk about players specifically. Mm-hmm. What we don't do in men's hockey is talk about players by their nameplate. We talk about by their number. So if I say 87, you know exactly who I'm talking about. If I say 99, you know who I'm talking about. 68, 66, 88. Like, there's a pile of numbers that 4, 9 that are specific to one player.
Mm-hmm. 30.
There are other teams, there are other players that have worn those numbers. But when you say it, the first name that is going to be in 90% of situations, 90% of people will say the same thing.
Yep.
It'll be Gordie Howe for number 9. It'll be Bobby Orr for number 4. It'll be, you know, Mary Lemieux for number 66. It'll be Wayne Gretzky for 99.
William Nylander for 88.
Owen Nolan, Joe Sakic for 88. Yeah. Again, Eric Lindros. You might get probably a few Patrick Kanes coming out of that at the same time, though. But again, we're talking about specific players who have had a legacy in those numbers.
Number 10 for Dale Hawerchuk in Winnipeg.
Right, is a legacy here. Nobody's going to argue that. Again, people are going to argue 13 versus 8 when it comes to Solani's legacy as well. 13 is how everybody loved to remember him. 8 was just kind of it's an experiment. Mm-hmm. Same thing in Vancouver, 10 versus 96 for Pavel Bure. I want to know 24 in hockey as being Natalie Spooner. I want to know 29 in hockey as being Marie-Philippe Poulin. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, you mentioned it before, Nathan MacKinnon is 29 as well. But regionally in Montreal, if you mention 29, it should only bring up one player's memory. Mm-hmm. Again, 21 in Boston for Hillary Knight. 11 in New York for Abby Rock. I want to have one number that I go, you know what? I know that number.
Yeah.
Like it brings one player to my mind. And we aren't doing that by making a big stink over where the name bars are.
Yeah.
Sell me the number, don't sell me the actual. Again, you don't buy a jersey because it's got a nameplate on the back. You buy it because you want the name and number.
Yeah.
The number is what matters. Mm-hmm. And if it didn't matter, why did it take the NHL over 50 years to put names on jerseys?
That's why the number is really big on the back of the jersey.
Again, I don't mind people wanting a jersey with a number on it. I get it. Or a name on it, excuse me. I get it. I understand it. I have a lot of jerseys at home. Mm-hmm. But you can't have the name without the number.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
You can have the number without the name, but not the other way around.
Here's the thing. You know, growing up and then also in beer league, referees never had a problem if a guy didn't have a nameplate on.
Right.
They did have a problem if your numbers were falling off.
Right.
Because that's what they use to identify you.
But again, I think that what Molson's doing here, though, is selling their own ad campaign in a way that legitimately devalues, delegitimizes what these women are doing.
They found a way to acquire one of the most important spots on a jersey.
Right.
And just slammed this campaign and all of this like empowering women stuff on the back end just to justify it.
You wonder how much money that cost. And I only ask that because it is such a traditional hockey position for the name.
Exactly.
Like, how much would you sell that for on your own jersey?
It would be in the NHL, it would be an obscene amount of money.
Oh, absolutely. But we saw them we saw them put names below in the All-Star game.
Yeah. We're already seeing like how sacred name bars are with the MLB, with the new Fanatics jerseys. Like, that spot on the jersey is important.
That's big. So, I don't know. To me, I'm not against Molson giving them money, but let's not correlate two different ideas, two different things as being one big campaign. It's not the same. And we need to tell, again, I'm happy that these women are going to have this revenue coming in for them. I'm not happy, though, that they have to have their names down on their rear ends.
That too. That was something I thought of when I first saw it. Another thing that I think of is when you're trying to identify a player, you look at the number. If you don't know the number, you look at the name. Which direction do you look at when you're trying to look for a name? You look up.
So
you're going to be looking. They're going to be looking directly at the Molson logo,
right?
When you're trying to figure out who these people
are. But here's the other thing is on TV, you can't see the names. If they're playing the game, you can't see the names. So if somebody skates by, for example, if 15 on Ottawa skates by, do you know who 15 on Ottawa is?
Myself, no.
Well, you should because it's Savannah Harmon.
Yes.
Who was on this show. But if you didn't know who 15 on Ottawa was, what's the first thing you do when you go to the internet? Who is number 15 on the Ottawa team?
Yes.
And then you associate number to name, not the other way around. It's not name to number.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the Gretzky situation. I completely understand that. It's why jersey cameos throw people for a huge loop in the NHL.
Yeah.
Zach Parise wearing number 9 is understandable in terms of where he goes, but Zach Parise wearing 91 would not be cool because people would be like, who is that? What Parise is that?
Exactly.
So to me,
there's a reason why we retire numbers, not names.
Right. I mean, we do retire names in the Hall of Fame, but at the end of the day, the number association is so much stronger than the name association. Mm-hmm.
And again, you
said regionally it matters. 10,
yes.
10 is a number that probably will never be worn again in Winnipeg.
Yeah, 55. Any hockey fan in Winnipeg knows 55, 27.
Isn't 55 Ulanov?
Nice. 37. What NHL player wears the number 37?
But that's
The guy that tends the twine for the Winnipeg Jets.
But that's the question, though, is that if you're building a legacy in terms of those players who have been here for a while or have done great things in those jerseys, you're associating the number to that, and you shouldn't have it any other way. Mm-hmm. So let's stop making the elevation of a player's name the important thing here. Just elevate the game.
Yeah.
invest at the lower levels as well. Stop just dumping money onto the professional league. They don't need a lot of money. They have a bazillionaire hedge fund behind them.
Yep.
What they do need is a lot more minor hockey investment, as well as, you know, university and amateur hockey investment.
If you really want to help, put them in your advertising then.
And I'm okay with that. Like, they do
put
have
them
a
on banners.
They
put
do
them
have
on
a commercial
places.
Out. And again, I'm not trying to take anything away from this, but here's the commercial quickly. And again, there's no speaking in this or whatever, but it's basically just a bunch of proof that names are hidden by hair. And I go, but I know who all those players are because I can recognize the first few letters of their name bar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't confuse me with S-P-O when it's Spooner.
Yeah.
You can't confuse me with E-L-D. It's Eldridge. I know that. Dempsey's got her name in front of her ponytail. Now, again, I'm a women's hockey fan. I understand this.
Yes.
But if you don't know who that player is, whether the name is up or down, you're still going to associate the number as who is number 14.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you identify them. And if we pulled the names off, players wouldn't change a damn thing because they'd still have a number that identifies them directly.
Mm-hmm.
Number 14 is Dempsey, Jillian Dempsey on Montreal. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because she's number four. She's the only number 14 on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
There are no other number 14s. We're making a big deal out of nothing. Like you said, it's an issue. It's a controversy or an issue that's been caused when there wasn't one.
Yep.
And we need to understand corporate dollar value is great, but we can't sell our soul for this.
There is one ad executive out there that is smiling because they got this idea through and it's going to make Molson a lot of money.
I think I have her name somewhere in here as well. There was a quote that I had here as well, but whatever. Anyway, I don't like it, but whatever. I mean, no big deal. Let's go to the NHL trade deadline quickly because there's a bunch of trades that have happened, a bunch of things that have gone on, a bunch of trades that won't be, probably be discussed for hours tomorrow because nothing else will happen. But I don't care about some of the smaller ones. So like Cade Weber being acquired by the Maple Leafs and the Hurricanes, who gives a crap?
Whatever.
First big one that happened, or the most recent big one that happened, Yakov Trenin and Graham Sword from Nashville go to Colorado for Jeremy Hansel, a third-round pick. I like this only because I like Yakov Trenin as a player. He's a pain in the rear to play against.
Got some breaking news for you.
Oh, here we go. I want to see what they get. Well, okay, we'll get to that trade in a second. Hold on, we'll get to that trade in a second. But Yakov Trenin to Colorado, do you like the deal or not?
I like it for Colorado. You add a guy with a bit of snarl to his game. You can kind of fill out your bottom six, your middle six if you really need them. You mentioned it before the show. He's a potential replacement for Valeri Nichushkin. It's not like the thing about what Colorado has done in the flurry of trades that they've made is that they've just brought in a bunch of depth pieces because the problem for them this year has been they've been a one-line team.
Right. I agree.
So they're bringing in a whole bunch of pieces. They're kind of moneyballing it, right? Where they are trying to buy goals and points and wins by aggregate.
Brandon Duhaime goes from Minnesota to Colorado as well. Do you like that gritty addition as well?
Yeah, I think so. I'm more questioning what Minnesota's doing.
I don't know either. That's crazy.
Picking up a third round pick for a guy that really doesn't move the needle too much on your team, like that's fine.
I mean, I guess it's a pick back, which is good, but whatever.
Yeah,
Troy Stetcher goes from Arizona to Edmonton. I hate this deal only because I don't understand what they're trying to do in Edmonton at this point.
Yeah, I don't understand either. Like he doesn't solve the problem that you have.
You have Cody Ceci. He's already one big mistake. Why are you adding another one?
Yes, but that's it, right? Like they're compounding a problem instead of finding a solution because they just. I don't know what Ken Holland thinks is wrong with this team. It's definitely not that you're a Tory Stetcher away from a Stanley Cup.
No, I don't think any team's a Tory Stetcher away at this point, but whatever. Joel Edmondson gets to go to Toronto for a third and a fifth round pick to Washington. Again, I don't understand Toronto's issue here with Edmondson. He is a terrible defender who doesn't understand gap control. He had one good season in St. Louis, and that's about it.
Yeah, well, like I understand what Toronto is trying to do. They're trying to shore up their defensive depth because it's been kind of a bit of a carousel the last little while because Jake Muzzin's gone and, you know, TJ Brody is just no longer TJ Brody.
Well, Mark Giordano's hurt as well.
Giordano was hurt and he wasn't even playing that much to begin with.
But
you fired Hall into the sun. You lost Rasmus Sandin for nothing. I understand that they're trying to do something, but you should have made a bigger splash than this.
Well, but I mean, Edmondson doesn't even solve any of the problems.
No,
you have. He's just another bottom pairing defender for them.
But it's really indicative of what Brendan Shanahan via
Treleving
wants to do with this team. It's just get big, fast guys that punch.
I'm not sure Edmondson's
because
that's
apparently
right
their problem. And it's not that the top guys on that team, one, get paid too much money, and two, do not stick up for themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean Ryan Reeves doesn't do a lot of that either, but whatever. Noah Hanifin goes to Vegas in another cap related. Oh my God, what are they doing? Move.
That's the trade that I think Toronto should have made, because Vegas gets 25% of Noah Hanifin's contract. Couldn't have swung that, Brad Treliving.
But I think Calgary getting, like, again, I think Vegas took advantage of the fact that they're giving up two conditional picks, a first round and a third round, right?
Mm-hmm.
Legitimately, Calgary's banking on the fact that Vegas is all in again this year. And yeah, if you're Calgary, can Toronto match that? The answer is no. They don't have the picks to do that.
Yeah. Also, Calgary, can you bleep or get off the pot? Please?
No.
Can you
decide
what you're doing?
We're done. Because
you just fired off Noah Hanifin for picks. You're keeping Jacob Markstrom. You extended Daniil Miromanov, who you got in the trade from Vegas. I don't understand that. Like, also, what is Philadelphia doing?
Again, we'll get to that in a second. A couple of the other bigger trades that went through. Again, we'll sort of slide over this. Wenberg to the Rangers. Okay, he's a bottom six guy. Middlestat for Bowen Byram. I think they gave up on Byram too early, but
yes,
Middlestat's going to be a player for them. I think that's going to turn out to be a very promising, I would say, for Colorado. I like the way that Middlestat plays. Sean Walker comes over from Philly. Again, I don't understand that trade. You already have Devin Taves that can do what Sean Walker does and does it better.
Yes.
So I don't know why we're adding Sean Walker on that. Ducks dealt Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick to the Oilers, which again fills out their bottom six nicely, but maybe Henrique can be a power play guy for them. I don't know.
I just don't get it. What did they give up for Henrique?
First round pick, a conditional fifth round pick.
Oh, gee. Well, you did get, Sam Carrick's not really going to draw into the lineup very much, is he?
Well, he might, but again, if you have Stetcher and CeCe ahead of him now, probably not.
God, Cody Ceci still is getting jobs in the NHL. That first round pick is, I mean, trade is a win for the Ducks.
Well, sure, yeah.
Even though they did give up a lot for it, walking away with a first round pick from the Oilers.
Yeah, no conditions on it.
No conditions.
Yeah.
It's just, again, it's there. Ken Holland. I'm not calling it, rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, because obviously Edmonton is...
It's pretty close to that, though.
Yeah. But Edmonton can win because they've got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
But you haven't solved the one-line problem that you have yet.
Exactly.
Again,
that's the problem.
Colorado's trying to solve that. Edmonton's doing nothing to help that.
Here's the thing. We talked about them just a second ago. The Toronto Maple Leafs have William Nylander playing on the third line.
Yeah.
He's sixth in league scoring.
No, it doesn't matter.
Playing on the third line as a $10 million forward.
Sheldon Keefe says no big deal.
Yeah. He's playing with Max Domi. And Edmonton can't figure out that, hey, maybe we should spread these guys out. Maybe we should pick up some pieces here so we can roll lines like Vegas.
Nope, we're not going to do that. The weird part is they're going to run into Vegas, and Vegas is just going to punch them in the mouth again.
Yeah. And they're going to sit there and complain, well, Vegas circumvented the cap, and blah, 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 and Vegas is
just
really good.
Sure. They do circumvent the cap, but they're doing it by the rules.
You have the biggest marketing tool in your arsenal. You have Connor McDavid. players should be lining up to play with him.
And they are. They just can't afford to sign them all. That's the problem. Vladimir Tarasenko to Florida. I don't think he fits the Florida Panthers. Okay. I think he could be effective on the power play, and that's about it.
Paul Maurice is going to hate him.
I'm not certain Paul Maurice doesn't hate him already, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, he's just everything Paul Maurice doesn't like because he doesn't punch faces.
Yeah, that's going to hurt. Although, again, they said he could be a decent add on the second line, replacing Nick Cousins on that line. So, I mean, maybe that's the case. The only thing I don't like about Tarasenko, though, is that, again, the Panthers play at 100 miles an hour, and Tarasenko doesn't. He is nowhere close to that.
Since, you know, the injury history that he has causes me some concerns, and the injury history is why he wound up on the Ottawa Senators to begin with, because he isn't the 30-goal scorer Vladimir Tarasenko that he was during his time with St. Louis. Like, you're kind of acquiring him hoping that he can reacquire that form and potentially perform in the playoffs, but I'm not totally sold on what Tarasenko can do in the playoffs, particularly with where his body is at and where his game is at right now. And the way Florida plays, like, are you going to park him in front of the net and hope that he can just bang in some goals? Because I don't think he has the physicality to do that. He doesn't have the foot speed to keep up with the other guys in that lineup. Like, I don't know.
I don't understand.
And his stats with Ottawa, you can't even look at those and try and get anything out of it.
But that's
Ottawa.
The thing. Like, you're acquiring a broken down car for for a conditional fourth round and a third round pick, but. Again, it's a broken-down car. It's not going to do much for you. So the other that you alluded to reportedly is Jake Guentzel on his way to Carolina.
Do you want the details?
So I have some of them. I don't know if I have all of them, but some of them. Michael Bunting is reportedly to be reuniting with Kyle Dubas.
I was about to say, Kyle, what are you doing, Kyle?
He has 13 goals, 13 assists in 60 games this season. But Guentzel is... not officially yet, although apparently, according to Pierre LeBrun, some final details need to be ironed out, but it sounds like a post-game trade after a call with the league tonight. Both teams play tonight, so they may be holding off on announcing this. But, yeah.
What do you think of that trade?
I mean, I understand...
We knew Jake Guentzel was going to get traded.
Yeah, I understand that Jake Guentzel has to be traded at this point, because, again, everything that But this problem with the Penguins, and I'll say this as nicely as I can, because I know there are Penguins fans out there who listen to the show, and certainly I'm a Penguins fan, but this problem with the Penguins started when Kyle Dubas went all in on Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
You did not need Erik Karlsson in this lineup.
Well, it was...
And the cap inflexibility that you've provided Pittsburgh now has cost you Jake Guentzel at the very least.
But this is the guy that, you know, paid the sun and the moon... to the guys in Toronto, right?
But you also gave $5 million to Tristan Jarry, who I wouldn't trust with an AHL contract, let alone an NHL contract.
Yep. But this is...
And then you tried to patchwork it with Nedeljkovic after that.
Yes. Penguins fans are now going to see what Toronto fans saw for a really long time, is that Kyle Dubas loves his guys. He loves to do right by his guys. So get ready. You are not getting rid of any of the big pieces, because... Kyle Dubas always does right by his
Pittsburgh
players.
Pittsburgh got rid of a Michael Bunting when they traded Jason Zucker. Like, you didn't need to bring another one in.
Yes.
At a higher price, might I add.
But he's a guy that Kyle Dubas knows from his time with the Leafs.
I know.
I also think he's a Sault Ste. Marie Greyhound.
Was he?
I feel like it's Kyle Dubas.
If he acquires
them like they're Pokemon.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Michael
Bunting was a Sault Greyhound. 2013 to 2015.
There you go.
Son of a...
He was a Sault Greyhound. Man, Penguins fans are going to get such an education on who played for Sault Ste. Marie. It's going to be great. But here's the thing. I get that, and the Ron... He still has to undo a whole bunch of the problems that were started by the Ron Hextall regime for the 50 seconds that he was in charge of that team with Brian Burke. But he's not the guy to do it. He's the guy to take over a team that can win, and tinker around the edges to try and spirit them forward, and add like pieces and do some cap shenanigans to add some discount pieces and find guys like the diamond in the, like one of the things that Kyle Dubas is good at is finding kind of diamond in the rough players that can fill out your middle six and kind of guys that'll come and surprise you. What he's not good at is handling guys with tons of money on the books and making broad sweeping changes to a team, which is what he tried to do bringing in Erik Karlsson. And we know that part of that was driven by ownership wanting to win, and Ron Hextall was going to try and trade, you know, wasn't planning on retaining Malkin and Letang, and Crosby has said he wants to retire as a Penguin, which kind of like hamstrings what Dubas can do. But then you don't go and add Erik Karlsson.
But Erik Karlsson was unnecessary in terms of what you had back there. Like, again, I'm not saying that he's a bad player, and I'm not saying that he doesn't do things well, but he's an unnecessary player when you already have Chris Letang on the team.
You have Erik Karlsson and Erik Karlsson light.
Like, I don't know.
And then
this was a Penguin show, I'd cancel it right now.
Jake Guentzel is a valuable piece.
He was a very valuable. He was the number one winger for Crosby.
He's gonna get pay.
Yeah.
For what he produces, and then you bring in Michael Bunting, who we know doesn't really add that much. Like, you got,
again, he's Jason Zucker all over.
Yeah, he doesn't really add that much. He is hated by the referees, so he's not going to get a call. He's probably going to get suspended if he ever gets to the playoffs again. Like, it's just enough. It's an unnecessary trade.
All right, want to go over the quick news? We got about 13 minutes to go here. We still got a big story to go over, but let's go with the quick news quickly. Max Comtois to Carolina is a free agent. He was playing with Chicago Wolves. He has 12 goals, 16 assists, 97 penalty minutes, 45 games, but he's a minus 17 in the AHL. Again, not that plus minus is a really good stat, but minus 17 does tell you something. Again, I don't see him as a fit in Carolina. I don't know why Carolina signed him. So whatever, unless they need another physical winger, I guess. I mean, maybe Comtois is the replacement for Bunting.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
It's not official, but it sounds like Phil Kessel will sign with the Vancouver Canucks before Friday's deadline in order for him to be eligible to play in the playoffs this year. I'm not sure Kessel fits there either, but he does bring Stanley Cup experience, and he still can score, as shown in his stint with Arizona.
I guess they're kind of hoping that he'll rekindle what he had in Pittsburgh, where it's like he doesn't have to be the guy. He just kind of plays hockey and tries to fill the back of the net when you've got all of the weapons that Vancouver has.
Okay, but he was the guy with Malkin, though. Like Kessel and Malkin worked so well together because they were so different.
Yeah.
And yet when they were on the ice, it was magic together. Mm. So, like, are you going to put him with, like,
Pettersson?
Like Pettersson and hope that that magic is rekindled?
Just, like, bring him in and be like, okay, Elias, you have to hate this man.
Right. Like,
you have to yell at each other every chance you get. When you play together, it's gold.
So Phil Kessel might be a Canuck by before the end of Friday. We'll have to see about that. Other leagues, PWHL Montreal ran into some injury problems, so they turned to the reserve. They signed former Pandas forward Alex Poznikov for the remainder of the season. Congratulations to Alex. She's wearing number 17, and she's played in two games. She has three shots on net, but has yet to record a point. Keep an eye on her progress, but nice to see the former Canada West sniper getting an opportunity to play in the big leagues with Montreal.
Wasn't she with Howie in New York for a little bit?
No, Howie did not select her. Lindsay Post is down there, though, in terms of the panelists down there. PWHL Minnesota captain and Team USA member Kendall Coyne Schofield announced today via Twitter that she's going to be one of the voices heard in the upcoming Disney Pixar movie Inside Out 2.
Yeah.
Schofield, who didn't reveal which character will have her voice, she'll be playing, I guess, alongside Riley, the young protagonist in the movie who plays hockey. So this seems like a perfect opportunity for Schofield. And for those wondering, Inside Out 2 debuts in theaters, on June 14th this summer. Yeah,
really great. Pixar is very good at getting not just like really talented people, but like very specific. Like, they understand their audience in terms of who they bring in to do guest spots like this, like what they did with Cars, what they did with Zootopia and bringing in Peter Mansbridge
for
Canada, doing all those little, like, custom tweaks for different regions. So it's exciting.
Kind of cool to see that, yeah. Former Mountain Royal Cougars defender Connor Blake signed a deal with the ECHL's Idaho Steelheads last weekend. He was in the lineup last weekend for wearing number 51. As the Steelheads hosted the Utah Grizzlies, they did lose that game, unfortunately. But Blake recorded no meaningful stats, was not on the ice for a goal against either, which was kind of nice to see. I think that Blake's going to be a good fit there in Idaho. He's a solid two-way puck-moving defender, doesn't take penalties, and certainly he'll have a chance to impress a few people as he's on the road trip this weekend into Newfoundland, where they'll play three games before taking a swing through Trois-Rivières, where he'll meet up with Nolan Yaremko, his former teammate, who plays for Les Lions.
That should be a fun game.
That'll be probably a long talk at center ice between those two, I'm sure. So be kind of cool to see that. On Tuesday, there was a trade in the ECHL that saw Florida Everblades send former Manitoba Bison sniper Brett Davis to the Rapid City Rush for former Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks forward Jimmy Soper. Davis, it should be noted, had 3 goals and 10 assists in 33 games this season, while Soper had 7 goals and 16 assists in 55 games at the Rush. So just a swap for forwards between those two teams, but kind of cool that two U Sports players got swapped for each other, former U Sports players got swapped for each other. Mm-hmm. Speaking of U Sports, let's start with the men. One team still trying to piece together its perfect season. I can tell you that the UNB Reds will continue to do that. They swept Moncton in the AUS final. We're just waiting no shock there, but they will enter the tournament as the number one ranked team. Joining them, obviously, are UBC and Calgary from Canada West. UBC won the championship there. All of UQTR, Brock, and McGill will go, and we're just waiting on on the OUA as TMU, who is still playing. They're in the final. They're going to go as the host, and they're going to play against UQTR on Saturday at 6:15 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be free on OUA TV if you want to watch it. That should be a pretty good game, considering the two teams, whoever ends up in that, the winner between those two teams will be ranked as one of the top three teams in the nation at that point for the tournament. The women are in the same boat. They know who's going, but they need the OUA to finish up the playoffs. The Macaw Cup is set for 7 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. Toronto and Waterloo in that game, as Toronto beat Guelph and Waterloo beat York. We know who's going from the other conferences. Canada sending UBC Thunderbirds as the champion, and Saskatchewan's going to host. So those are the two Canada West reps. RSEC will be sending its champion, the Concordia Stingers, finalist in the Montreal Caribbeans. AUS will send their champion, the UNB Reds, and they'll send their finalist, the St. FX X-Women, as the champion, as 6 of 8 teams from last year make the dance again this year. Teams that didn't, Saskatchewan and Waterloo. So could be a little bit of a class reunion there in the women's setup there.
Fun.
The big news, and this is our Melbourne moment for the day, folks. It's not going to be an actual goofy news clip. We actually have a Melbourne moment today. The AIHL has announced that they are getting set for their 2024 season.
Yes.
So for those that don't know, the AIHL 2024 season, it will officially launch next week, March 20th, at Bondi Icebergs in Sydney, Australia. Media, government officials, sponsors, corporations, and teams will be in attendance. Here are the statistics that you need to know for the league, though. There will be 150 regular season games. Each team will play 15 home and 15 away games for a total of 30 games per team, so no big deal. There'll be up to 200 featured Australian players, the highest number ever recorded in the AIHL. Over 50 imports from Canada, the U.S., Europe, and Asia-Pacific. All games are going to be live-streamed on AIHL.tv with a subscription, unfortunately. It costs about $70 if you want to get on that. Or you might be able to catch them for free on onhockey.tv. Over 150 volunteers and team staff will be operating in 8 stadiums across 6 states and territories this season. So fantastic to see the involvement. Over the past 2 years, the AIHL has been working with the Ice Hockey Australia, the Ice Hockey Federation of Australia, to build the national pool of officials. The league remains committed to the 4-person official system for all AIHL games, and the league now has over 60 certified officials nationwide, which is
amazing.
Awesome. That's fantastic to see.
When we talk about growing the game somewhere, that is huge.
Growing it, getting officials involved is massive. In late 2022, they officially launched the AIHL PA under the stewardship and guidance of Robert Burt Malloy. Representatives from each team support Burt and will be announced in a separate release later in the coming weeks. In 2024, the league is pledged to work with Burt and the AIHL PA to make the league better moving forward. They're also committed to the grassroots development of the sport, closely aligned to Ice Hockey Australia. This year, the AIHL intends to enhance the AIHL Futures program to leverage new and potential hockey players who attend our games to be referred to clubs and academies around the country, which I think is super cool. Because basically they're saying, if you want to be part of our league, here we go. We'll get you into the places that will allow that to happen.
Building a pipeline.
Yeah, that's fantastic. They've already announced the finals. The O'Brien Ice House in Melbourne will again host the AIHL Final Series over the 3-day festival. See, I told you it was a Melbourne moment. over a 3-day festival from August 23rd to 25th, 2024. That will be your final series in terms of the championship.
Nice.
The finals will include the top six from across two conferences. Series tickets will go on sale from May, on May 1st, and that will include bundling accommodation packages. Here's the important part, and this is the news that I think that everybody needs to know, because this is the coolest thing I've heard in a long time. As you probably know, the AIHL uses imports. Up to six players from North America and Europe can be on each team, and up to two players from Asia Pacific can be on each team. Fans can expect to see up to four players from North America and Europe and one from Asia Pacific on the ice for each team at every game. However, after being approached by the IIHF and with the support of Ice Hockey Australia, the AIHL has agreed for each team, to sign a single Ukrainian player who will be treated as a local player, not an import. The reason for this, obviously, is to get these players back on the ice. This initiative is only for players who are in the Ukraine and who have played in the Ukrainian league. This is a progressive move by the AHL and puts the league in elite company as a participating league and offers the players some respite from the ongoing conflict in their country.
Which is amazing.
I think that's a fantastic move by the Australian Ice Hockey League.
Absolutely incredible to obviously build those kinds of bridges and to give people opportunities to do what they love and keep, you know, add a bit of a bright spot to a very dark, what continues to be a very dark time for a nation that has seen quite a few dark times in the last few years.
And for a group of people, and again, I'm not saying yay or nay in terms of Ukrainian people at all, in terms of, you know, what they know and what they don't know, but for a group of players who have learned to be hockey players all their lives, this gives them a chance to continue doing what they do best.
Exactly.
It gives them a chance to bring some pride back to that nation that's been so brutally decimated by a terrorist, yes. I'll say.
Mm-hmm. By a horrible monster of a human being.
Yes. So congratulations to the AIHL. You got two fans over here, obviously, in terms of Jason and I watching the games. And we'll try and get everybody updated as to what Melbourne's doing, our favorite team over in Australia, as the season begins. Again, season will kick off at least the whole setup anyway, on Wednesday, March 20th, in terms of getting everything going. So we'll keep an eye on that for you. 2 minutes left, Jay. Anything you want to add before we get out of here?
I will be in Toronto in 2 weeks.
You will?
I will be doing a book signing at Baca Phoenix Books in Toronto. If you are in the GTA, it's on March 22nd.
Yeah.
So if you are in Toronto in the GTA and you want to come down, want to come meet me, grab a book, I will be there. I'll be there at 7 o'clock.
We'll have no Jason for the next 2 weeks, because next week this show is on the road as well, as I am off to Saskatoon to watch the U Sports Women's National Hockey Championship. I will have the radio show with me. There will be a show where we do a Huskies roundtable.
Awesome.
Three Huskies from different eras. We're going to talk about, you know, their experiences playing for the Huskies and give us a little background, a little idea as to what hockey in Saskatoon is like. So we'll have some fun with that, I think, in terms of getting that on. So Jay got next week off. Obviously, you're traveling the week after, so we'll see you when you get back. Safe travels, and we'll hopefully have some stories to tell as we get out of here. But again, if your team's making trades like mine, like the Penguins are, don't hate everybody tomorrow. Watch TSN, watch Sportsnet if you want, but it might not be worth it.
Why you have be mad? It's only game.
No, it's only game. I got you, Briscalov. With that, folks, stay tuned for your interview with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. It's been a blast. We'll see you next week. Or actually, we won't see you next week. I'll see you in Saskatoon next week. Jason, best of luck in Toronto in 2 weeks. We'll see you. We'll talk to you guys soon here on the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
People were so nice in Winnipeg. It was freezing, and they kept apologizing for the weather. They're like, sorry it's so cold, sorry it's so cold. I was like, I'm almost positive it's not your fault. But they kept apologizing, sorry about the weather. Eventually I was like, did you not pay a bill or something?
Politely broadcasting from Winnipeg, this is 101.5 UMFM.
Weather worked different up here?